welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingüe. Our phone number here at the station is area code 760-337-8874. Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Today we are minus Scott Dudley, so I'll be here with our guest today is Oscar Aguilar. Trying to use my Spanish.
Good morning, Maria. How are you doing today?
Good. He is the psychiatric social worker for Imperial County Behavioral Health, and he is waiting or in what is it called, like working towards your LCSW, your licensed clinical social worker.
Right, in process of obtaining that license as a clinical social worker, yes.
Yes. So that's, how many hours does that take to complete, 50 hours? You're still waiting to take the test, but...
Right. Yeah, I think it was about 3,200 hours, actually.
That's
a lot of time, like 4 or 5 years worth.
Yes. So that's completed. So today we're going to be talking about,
We're going to be talking about the prevention and early intervention program through behavioral health. It is a program that started about 8-9 months ago, where we're doing evaluations out in the community, you know, with those children that have been exposed to some type of trauma or abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, initially, I mean, the trauma or abusive episode doesn't have to be like severe enough to render, you know, regular clinic services.
How does that, how are these kids, is there an age group or certain age that they can go to, or how are they identified? How are the kids?
Well, most of our referrals have come in through the different school districts throughout Imperial Valley. And it's typically when the school personnel notices some type of change in the student's behavior, or maybe the parents come in and request the
Can you give me some examples of those change in behaviors?
Changes in behavior, like, for example, if the child is maybe acting out, or maybe is more guarded, more reserved than he typically was before a traumatic episode or some other type of stressor that's going on in the home or out in the community where they live in.
Maybe even the parents going through a divorce.
Right, right, things like that. Yeah,
separation.
Right, separations, divorce, you know, losses in the family. All those are sometimes pretty...
Grandma passed away.
Yeah, pretty difficult for the child to deal with at times. So, yeah, they come to the attention of the school districts, and those are the ones that make referrals. Other times we've had other sources, you know, for referrals as well. So we're pretty much going out into the community, doing the initial evaluation, mostly at the schools, at the home, or any of the community centers that exist in Imperial Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So we're a community-based program, and we're there to be accessible to the population.
For example, we had this, you know, recently in April, you know, our earthquake. You know, our 7.2
right.
earthquake.
Right.
You know, my daughter, she's 4 years old, and she's, you know, she sometimes asks, you know, is it going to shake? Is it going to shake? You know, and I know a lot of my coworkers and a lot of families and friends, my families and friends, their kids, you know, they do not want to sleep by themselves still to this day. They don't want to sleep by themselves. You know, they're scared of anything, you know, a big truck going through, you know, the neighborhood.
Seems,
you know, it
like
kind of feels like
yeah.
an earthquake,
right.
You know, you know, they get scared.
Mm-hmm.
Would that classify like?
Oh yes, definitely. I've had several evaluations.
Probably you've had a lot from this
that,
recent.
Yes, from that experience, you know, with these children, and yes, they're very fearful. They're very worried about, you know, the possibility of another major earthquake and things like that. So yes, we have had several evaluations recently regarding the earthquake.
What's the process, or what is it that, you know, with this new program, how can you assist these kids? What do? you meet with them, or?
Yes, the evaluation process, the intake process is pretty much the same as our regular clinics at behavioral health. However, once the children do go into treatment, we use trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. That's our psychotherapy modality that we're using specifically at the prevention and early intervention program.
For that trauma, for example, like that, the earthquake.
Right, right. Yeah, this treatment modality is a perfect fit for these type of situations, you know, when children have been exposed to some type of trauma, some type of major stressor in their life. And once again, that symptoms and behaviors wouldn't meet the qualifications for our regular clinic, where more intense services are required.
More long-term or more...
Right, more long-term services, you know.
More intensive.
More intensive services, you know, like medication support and things like that. Right there at the Prevention Early Intervention Program, besides the psychotherapy, we also provide case management services, you know, for linkage and advocacy for the parents and all the other services that the case manager provides as well.
Now, do the parents take the, once they get identified, are these assessments done at the clinic, or where are they done?
Well, the assessments are pretty much completed out in the community, at the community centers, the schools, and sometimes even at the homes. As the parents, you know.
So you're mobile.
Yeah, we're
mobile.
You go
to wherever.
Mobile treatment services,
so you go wherever the services are. Oh, that's great.
Right. Yeah. So we're out there to be.
Especially right now during this hot weather.
I try to stay indoors as much as possible, but.
You guys are the ones that are going.
Yeah,
out
there. we're going out there and stuff, but we try to do our all of our visits and our. Sessions, you know, early in the morning and things like that.
I mean, like for right now, since there's no school.
Right, right. Right now, since there's no school, there have been some changes. We're trying to get in contact with some of the family resource centers or even other community centers, you know, in the different cities here in Imperial Valley to see if they could, you know, let us borrow some space and we could meet with the clients there. But most of our contacts right now are at the homes. It gets pretty challenging at times, you know, with the different distractions and that exist in the home and things like that. But we just try to make the best of it, you know, to provide the services, you know, both to the client and to the parents, because there is a parenting component of the treatment modality that we use. So that's a very important part also.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. You know, what services are there offered to the parents?
Right, right.
You know, how can they deal, you know, after you guys are done with the services, with providing the trauma-focused CBT, you know, what happens afterwards?
Yeah, yes. What are they going to stay with?
You know,
what type of skills are they going to gain and things like that? Yes, and like I mentioned, there is a parenting component, you know, in this treatment modality. And also, we let the parents know what we're doing with the children as far as interventions and things like that, you know. Interventions that they could practice themselves, you know, if they're in a stressful situation or if there's, you know, shared trauma, things like that. So it's a benefit, you know, to both the client, the parents, and even other siblings that might benefit.
Oh, even the siblings.
Yeah, because I teach my clients, you know, and tell them, you know, to show their siblings, you know, especially if they're having a hard time, you know, coping with a particular stressor. Or if they're getting upset at a video game or things like that, you know, throwing the controller or stuff like that, you know, and they have practice.
And, you know, that happens often.
Right, right. And, some of my clients have also shown those parents, like, how to relax and how not to get upset and things like that, you know. And it's some of these parents that I don't really have access to because they're working all day and things like that. So I think it's a very good program overall.
What about once the process starts, and that's where, you know, we want to go into it. Once that they've been identified, you're going to provide them trauma-focused CBT. What type of modality is that? How does that work? Can you tell me more about it?
Well, I usually meet with my clients on a weekly basis.
And, you know, and the reason why I'm asking, because back then, before we had these evidence-based programs, you know, you would go to the local, you know, not all of them, but some of them are not no longer here. They moved away. But there were some therapists, and people would go, and they would do these visualizations and hypnosis, and, you know, that you're flying over this person or this situation, and you're imagining.
Right.
We no longer do that. We don't, right. I mean, we don't do it at Behavioral Health.
Right.
We do, you know, these evidence-based programs, and one of them is trauma-focused CBT.
Right. Yes, well, I meet with my clients on a weekly basis, and with this treatment modality, it's very structured.
Mm-hmm.
It's very specific. You know, it goes in different stages. I mean, the first couple of sessions, it's all about psychoeducation,
mm-hmm.
psychoeducation on trauma and abuse in general. And also specifically for the type of trauma or abuse that the child might have endured.
How do you do it when a child comes to you and, you know, it's been identified, but they don't want to talk about it? They just don't, you know, and usually a lot of kids do that. You know, something happens, something bad happens, and a lot of the kids keep it inside and just don't say anything.
Right.
Or they could be scared. For example, kids who've been sexually abused,
right,
you know, the
right.
perpetrators, you know, they scare them and say, you know, if you say
something,
you know, I'm going to do some harm to your animal, to your pet, to your dog, to your
right.
mom, your family.
Right. Well, I think first and foremost, it's very important to establish some type of rapport with a child mm-hmm. or adolescent. Sometimes what I'll do is if the child or adolescent isn't responsive to the rapport building skills, then I'll just ask for the general information that I need to complete my evaluation, and then I'll go into the specifics, you know, the type of trauma, the type of abuse, you know, the type of stressor that they're going through, and just hopefully by that time, you know, towards the end of the session, I've established enough rapport, you know, to mm-hmm. get that information that I need, you know. And of course, I just touch on it lightly in the evaluation,
mm-hmm.
But later on, during the first session or even the second session, then we could go like into details. We also do a questionnaire
mm-hmm.
and an index. It's one of them is called the Youth Outcome Questionnaire Self-Report, where there's like about 62 questions. You know, that evaluates, you know, some of the type of thoughts and feelings. And
you
and
ask
behaviors.
Those questions to the youth?
Right. Yeah. They're gonna complete that questionnaire. Mm-hmm. And there's also a parent form also, mm-hmm. a parent version. And they also complete the UCLA PTSD index for DSM-IV to establish if
PTSD.
Right. Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and we also have that questionnaire just to explore if they might need, you know, this diagnosis of PTSD.
So at that point, you complete that and you say, you know what, no, these symptoms, you know, this child, this youth is showing more intense or severe symptoms, you can transfer them to a different program, or do they stay with you?
No, we can transfer them to a different program, to our regular clinics,
mm-hmm.
Where, like I mentioned, they could receive
more intensive services. So that part, that first sessions that you have, that's a very important part. I mean, that's the kind of like building the part, building that engagement with the youth and trying to open up and get more information. And
right.
So that's a very critical part.
Oh yes, it is. It is, because right there, you're. I think with many other clients at Behavioral Health, I mean that's a very important part of our treatment services, and I just think that's where you're gonna engage the mm-hmm. client fully, or that's where you're gonna lose them. So as clinicians, we really have to do a very thorough, you know, job and effective job
mm-hmm.
in getting these children, you know, to open up and.
Especially,
explain
yeah.
and educate on the benefits.
Yeah, especially when you're dealing with something, you know, a traumatic incident,
yes,
you know,
yes.
a traumatic event.
Yes, we have to put our empathy skills into play, you know. So our motivational skills into mm-hmm. play as well, our interviewing skills, things like that, you know, make the client feel that they're important, you know, that we're here to help them, to assist them in any problems that they might be having, so.
Okay. Well, today we're talking to Oscar Aguilar. He's a psychiatric social worker for Sierra County Behavioral Health, and we will be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services. A 5 to 6 minute highlight podcast of the same show is available on KXOradio.com.
Welcome back. You're still listening to Let's Talk About It with your host, Maria Wyatt. Today we're minus Scott Dudley. He is on vacation in somewhere in Idaho, and I told him to bring me some potatoes from there, so hopefully he'll bring me some potatoes. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUVO 88.7. Our phone number here at the station is area code 760-337-8874. And today we're talking to Oscar Aguilar. He is a psychiatric social worker. And today he's talking about one of the new programs that Behavioral Health has started, implemented, the Trauma Focus CBT under the
Prevention Early Intervention Program, PEI.
PEI, Prevention yes. and
Intervention.
Intervention Program. Yeah, I always get that. All these acronyms, new acronyms.
Right, Prevention Early Intervention Program.
Well, we were talking about, during the break, we were talking about the structure and how how important it is for parents to be involved.
Yes, definitely.
Because of the kids, you know, the trauma that they, just for them to, like we were talking before the break, the trauma that they've been exposed. Sometimes they don't want to talk about it.
Right.
But parents are important because they have information, you know, they know their child, they know how they were before, mm-hmm. how they are
right.
now. Another part is how involved the parents are in their treatment.
Yes, and that's very key in this treatment modality, you know, the parent participation, because there's a high probability, you know, that this parent is going through some type of stressor, I mean, as well, you know, along with the child, I mean, on top of the many other things that this parent, mm-hmm. you know, has to do with work and or even school, and just it becomes sometimes very, very difficult for the parent as well. So the parent benefits, you mm-hmm. know, and that's why the parent involvement is very important.
Or sometimes, like you said, some stress, or maybe the parent has also gone through the same trauma.
Right, a similar trauma maybe in their childhood mm-hmm. or adolescence and things like that. So, yes, it's very important. The client, the child and adolescent is our identified client, but the parents are sometimes kind of like the secondary clients as well, you know, where they benefit, you know, from the treatment as well.
Because after, like I said, after you guys, the treatment has been completed, you know, the child's going to go back home. What kind of supportive services is this child going to have
right, right.
if the parent was not involved in the treatment? So parental involvement is so important.
Yes, definitely. Definitely, it's very important. And like I mentioned before, yes, trauma-focused CBT does work in different stages. You know, the first couple of sessions, they're primarily psychoeducation mm-hmm. on the different traumas and different types of abuse that exist. And then I zero in on the specific situation of the client.
What kind of traumas have you been seeing more, like a certain number of, is it, like for example, we were saying, I was talking about the earthquake.
About the earthquake, yeah. There's been, of course, since April 4th. You know, a lot of earthquake ones, a lot of parental separation, parental mm-hmm. divorce.
The economy has a lot to do with that.
Right, right, to contribute to stressors. We've had a couple of losses,
mm-hmm.
a couple of losses in the family, things like that. But that's pretty much most of them have been related to that.
If there's sexual abuse, that goes to the clinic.
Right.
More
yeah.
Than,
when there's been a clear, you know, sexual abuse, physical abuse, even emotional abuse. Yeah. Those typically go to our regular clinics because the impact is much more severe from those mm-hmm. type of situations. So we refer them out to the regular clinics.
Mm-hmm. So when you start with the process, when you mentioned that trauma focused CBT is structured.
Right.
You know, the first, like you said, the first session is just getting them to build that rapport and get
right.
that information.
Yeah, and just getting other general information. We do the psychotherapy assessment, but we're also providing the psychoeducation component of TSCBT, and the subsequent sessions, they have to do a lot with teaching the child relaxation techniques, the different forms of relaxing. Of course, we focus on controlled breathing, progressive muscle relaxation, and other activities that the child might do, you know, that helps them relax. I usually ask them, okay, what do you do when you're very angry, very anxious, or very worried and things like that? What do you do that helps you to relax? Oh, well, I go play video games, or I go for a walk, or I like to talk to my older sister, or things like that. Mm-hmm. And so whatever works for them, but I teach them the controlled breathing and the progressive muscle relaxation and other activities as well. But I usually inquire as to, you know, what they feel comfortable with. Mm-hmm. After the relaxation techniques, we teach them to identify the different feelings that exist, you know, that we experience as humans. You know, so I make a little evaluation as to their level of knowledge, you know, of the different feelings. So we do some activities regarding identification of feelings. We also do cognitive coping, you know, to change our negative thought patterns into positive ones and things like that. We do different activities, you know, like the cognitive triangle, thought stopping.
All these activities that you're teaching them, I mean, that can easily work even later on.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
definitely. It's tools that they could use, you know, throughout the rest of their lives when they're confronted with some type of stressor in their lives.
I mean, but for right now, you're working with them to deal with this trauma that they've gone through.
Right. Right, so.
You're talking about, we're always talking about, you know, the youth and child, but you were mostly working with these, what is the age group?
It's, most of my clients, they're around 9, 10, 11 years old, 12 years old even. The youngest that I work with is probably a 5-year-old.
How is that?
Well, with that child, I had to do like a lot of play, a lot of games, and a lot of drawing, a lot of coloring, which I enjoy because I have children more or less that age, so that comes natural sometimes. But yeah, most of my clients, they're
you know, I mean, for them, you know, when you're working with these teens or, you know, like preteens, the preteens,
right.
You know, you're talking to them and, you know, telling them about muscle relaxation or, you know, breathing. And they can't understand, but for a 5-year-old.
Right, you have to get very creative, you know. You have to be very
concrete. You're like, what are you talking about,
right,
you know?
Right. Yeah, you have to be very concrete and just provide information, use words, you know, that are understandable to them, you know, considering their intellectual level, their maturity level, and things like that, so.
Yeah, very different from a 5-year-old to somebody that's, you know.
Yeah, definitely, so.
Do you use puppets? No.
I'm gonna have to order some. I used to like using puppets, but
my program has puppets. So.
No, okay. Yeah. So after the cognitive coping, we also start a trauma narrative where the child either writes, draws, you know, about the traumatic event. We usually break it down into three stages: what happened before the traumatic event, what happened during the traumatic event, and what's the aftermath of the traumatic event.
When you go through that stage, and you're in that stage right there, and if the child refuses to still talk about it, do you go back again?
Well, we warned them before that talking about specifically the traumatic event, because we're going to inquire as to what happened exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're very detailed in that process. And we before warned them about the thoughts, the feelings that are going to come back, you know, all those negative feelings that once existed. But we tell them, you know what, if they do present themselves, then we could always go back to the relaxation. We could always go back to cognitive coping. And it's at that time when we put these skills to the test.
How receptive are our parents for this stage? And the reason why I'm asking is because, you know, as parents, we want to protect our children, and
right, that's always a concern.
Yeah, and I don't want to expose my child to that. You know, that's I want you to help them. I don't want you to be exposing them again to that same trauma.
Right. Yes, the few trauma narratives that I have done, the parents have been pretty receptive to that process, And once again, I do educate them and tell them, you know what, this is liable to happen. Mm. You know, the child might start acting up again, or might, you know, start feeling a little bit anxious or a little bit sad, or, mm. or even angry, things like that. He might be very guarded, might not want to talk about it, things like that. But we use it as an education piece, you know, and as a skill test as well. Because, mm-hmm. like I said, they can always go back to the relaxation techniques, the cognitive coping, things like that. But we could process, you know, any feelings that they might be mm-hmm. experiencing, you know, reasons why they might not want to do it and things like that. So that's very understandable, you know. Try to normalize, you know, their feelings, you know, to validate their feelings and things like that. So
yeah, because I know a lot of people that just, you know, they've gone through traumatic events and have been able to cope, but you know, they've been able to cope on the outside, but you never talk about it and you
right.
never discuss about it, and when you want to bring it up, they just don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, they don't want to touch the subject, and that's not really too healthy in the long run emotionally, because we do have to process that information. Mm-hmm. We do have to talk about, for example, that loved one that we lost, mm-hmm. you know, and you know, just process, you know, the different information regarding this person, especially those positive memories, mm-hmm. you know, the good times that we spent together and things like that. It's a very important process to do. But we can't repress it. It's too damaging emotionally, mm-hmm. so.
And some people, I mean, even kids do that. You just don't talk about it.
Right. Just don't talk about it.
And it's kind of embedded in our culture, in our, you know, the Latino, Hispanic culture. Just, you know, you just keep it to yourself. And
right. Keep it to yourself. Keep it within the family.
Keep it with family.
Right.
Yeah. So after that, going through that trauma, going reliving that or
the trauma narrative,
trauma narrative. What is the
after that? The process pretty much ends.
It's,
I mean,
easy.
There's a couple of steps after that, but we haven't in the prevention early intervention mm-hmm. program. We haven't gone fully into that stage mm-hmm. because that last stage is for the more severe cases, like the clear post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, the type of clients that we see at our regular clinics,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I think at the trauma narrative, that's where it stops with most of our clients.
And by then, I mean, the clients already know how to cope. Like,
right, right. They have
these
skills, you know. They have
breathing.
This toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
They have this toolbox of skills, you know, that they can implement whenever they're feeling some type of disorder, some type of anxiety, sadness, anger, things like that.
And parents can help.
Yes, your parents can help.
They
too.
Also have a toolbox.
Right, right.
So all the family has a toolbox.
Right. Yeah, most of our clients, they don't really get to the trauma narrative
mm-hmm.
stage. They get to the first four stages, which is the psychoeducation, relaxation, coping, cognitive coping, affective modulation. That's PRAC, PRAC. So most of our clients, they're at that stage.
Mm-hmm.
They're at that stage. There's other ones that we might just do the psychoeducation piece,
mm-hmm.
two or three sessions of psychoeducation, because maybe their traumatic experience isn't affecting them like in any way. I mean, there's no impairment.
Mm-hmm.
They're dealing with it pretty well. They're pretty educated on the different types of feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe their coping mechanisms. They're doing pretty good. You know, they have a good support system, things like that.
You know, you're talking about all the good examples, and we're going to probably continue talking about it, the earthquake. I bet there's a lot of kids out there that are still traumatized from the earthquake.
Oh, yeah, especially because we had a little...
Yeah, the
5.7.
Yeah, a little.
That brought back a lot of those.
Even brought me back, because my building was damaged, and
right.
the first reaction was, oh, my God. You know, and it was very traumatic. I mean, the earthquake, and then after the earthquake, actually the after earthquake, it was more traumatic for me because of the whole my building, my office is at, it was damaged, moving, the trying to locate, it just was very traumatic.
Right.
And it came back, oh no, and I did. I had to kind of pass by the building after the earthquake and to see if it was okay. But it's just, you know, a lot of kids are, how can they, you know, there's no more school, so how can parents who are listening out there contact you, or how can they contact the program?
Yes, they could contact our office at area code 760-339-6822. That is our main line right there at the office. Either that, or they can contact any of the family resource centers mm-hmm. throughout the Napier Valley. They could contact some of the schools as well, because mm-hmm. I know some of the schools are still open.
Yeah, for summer school.
Right, for summer school. Or they also call Behavioral Health at 482-4000, the main line of Behavioral Health, and they can link them to our services.
I mean, these are great services. I mean, just, you know, that for something, you know, just, you know, the trauma, the earthquake or a loss or going through a divorce,
right.
You know, just a parent separation. Also for kids who whose parents are on, go on military. You know, they
yeah, gone. Because it's a loss. It's a loss. And of course, you know, the military personnel, I mean, they're off at war, so
mm-hmm.
so the child is worryful of the parent and things like that. So, yeah, it could be a significant stressor in their life.
Mm-hmm. Another one that might be coming up soon is that, you know, these older siblings, so they have younger siblings, you know, that age difference, kids who are going to go out to college.
Right.
You know, and all of a sudden the sibling is no longer there.
Yeah, especially if they have a close relationship, if it's a primary support, you know, for them. And
a pet loss, too. Believe it? Yes, a pet loss. I mean, I remember when my pet died. And I mean, and even I have pets, right? I can, you know, when my horse died, too. It's like,
mm-hmm.
oh. So, I mean, little things that we might think, oh, you know, they'll get over it.
Right.
They'll
right.
get over it.
Yeah, but you never know. You never know how the child is going to react. So, yeah, depending, I mean, any stressor, you know, and the difference I think it's very significant, you know, if the child really goes on a downward spiral as far as their emotions, as far as their behavior.
And that's what parents should be looking at
right.
to see, you know,
right.
after how their behavior has changed, how they're reacting.
Yeah, not necessarily at what happened specifically. I mean, loss of a pet, okay. But how about if this child hasn't had, you know, these adequate coping mechanisms?
Mm-hmm.
How about if the parents haven't been too supportive, so this child then becomes confused.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, you know,
cries every night,
not sleeping, not eating, stuff like that, you know,
mm-hmm.
because he misses his pet and things like that. So, yeah, we could provide
or
some type of information.
Yeah. And the earthquake, you know, not wanting to sleep by themselves,
right,
wanting to sleep
right.
with mom and dad.
Any type of change in emotions or behavior, I mean, we could at least evaluate and explore,
mm-hmm.
you know, what the situation is. So.
And if it's, you know, it's mild, they just go through a couple of sessions through you, and if it needs to be more, if it's more severe, then they can go through the regular.
Yeah, to our regular clinic, so we could keep them for, like I mentioned, the PRAC component
mm-hmm.
of TFCBT. You know, we can do 9, 10, even up to 12 sessions
mm-hmm.
of that. Because we really want the child and the parents to learn and to implement, you know, some of the skills and interventions that we're teaching
and avoid.
Them.
And prevent that.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
why it's this is a when
the
early
prevention.
The prevention,
prevention.
Prevent them. You know, give them these skills and
right.
these coping skills, in order if that for them as they're growing, they have these tools, and prevent maybe them going into being
right.
More
and
sick.
Like I tell children when I am about to discharge them, you know, I tell them, you know what, use this information, use these skills, use it for yourself, use it for your family,
mm-hmm.
use it for your friends. Use it for whomever, you know, you come into contact with that might benefit
mm-hmm.
of some of the information and skills that you've learned.
Do you think that a lot of the kids who have are in the regular clinic and going through the regular, for the severe cases, you know, of trauma-focused CBT, you know, if they would have had these skills or the family had these skills, do you think a lot of them could have been prevented or...
Well, I'm not sure if necessarily prevented, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, some of their experiences might have been less uncomfortable, you know, for
mm-hmm.
them, you know, some of their feelings, some of their behaviors that they've engaged in.
Like
know.
Divorce, going through a divorce, you know, that whole, you know, the family dynamic, it just, the whole family has been impacted. And a lot of these kids, and the reason why I'm asking is, you know, working at, I work for mental health and for also for alcohol and drug, and a lot of times, you know, there was an incident that caused these youth to, you know, cope, you know, they didn't know how to cope, so they used, resorted to drugs.
Right, right.
And then, you know, a lot of, like, alcohol, and then led to depression, and just, it just spiraled. And,
yeah, spiraled, one thing led to another, unfortunately. Yeah, in that case, yes, I think the... Our interventions, you know, the skills that they could have learned with us, you know, would have been very beneficial and maybe mm-hmm. decreased the probability of those children.
We can't prevent 100% prevention.
Right. Right. Yeah, but we could educate, you know, we could.
And the family, too.
Right, right. The parents as well.
But I like that idea that, you know, you mentioned earlier you're mobile. So you're providing services at the FRC or. So any agency out there, you know, that would like to have. Behavioral, they need a place to provide these services.
Right. Yeah, so we're accessible. Yeah, so we're a community-based program, so we're trying to be as accessible as possible, you know, to the population out there.
Especially, like you said, right now during the summertime, you know, kids, they're out of school, so probably they're at home more. So parents, if you're like seeing your kids, you know, just not, you know, their behavior has changed, anything, you know, or you're concerned. Just a concern, you should call. Right?
Yes. 760-339-6822. Or our main line at Behavior Health is 760-482-4000.
That's an easy number to remember.
Yeah, it's very easy.
But no, but again, this is, I mean, this is a great program. You know, as a parent, and, you know, you're a parent, you know, we want to help our kids as much as we can. And this is another opportunity. This is another resource.
Right, definitely.
Another resource is to provide, you know, these services to the kids and teachers. I mean, even though maybe we need to bring back the program when school starts again. Because, I mean, kids spend most of their day at school. And teachers, you know, if they notice something, behaviors, you know, they get to know these kids, you know.
Right.
You know, Johnny comes every day very happy to class, and, you know, he participates, and all of a sudden he's just quiet.
Right.
And just withdrawn.
Right.
You know, that would trigger it. Or parents, too. You know, parents, if they see their child, you know, they talk, and all of a sudden they just stop talking or just, you know, keeping to themselves.
Yes, and that's when the concerns come into play, you know, whenever there's that type of emotional or behavioral change,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's something to inquire about, you know, either the teachers, the parents, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes the family, you know, the parents aren't aware of those changes because then, like you said, they themselves also are going through some, you know, if they're going through a divorce, you know,
They just continue with their daily lives.
Yeah,
like
and if sometimes they might not notice, you know, their child also right. going through that. Or, you know, if they also lost a loved one, you know, just they're also going through the emotions too and might not notice it. So,
right.
you know, that's when other people might come in and other family members.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important for, you know, you know, it takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah, something like that. Right?
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, but thank you again, Oscar. Thank
sure.
you again for
Thank
coming
you for
in.
Me,
and we need to bring back again when school starts, like when the middle of the school, not the middle, but
yeah, like in October. October's
in October,
always a good month.
Yeah, and bring back something to.
This is my birthday, so
okay.
October 2nd. Remember that, Maria.
Okay, I will. I will. Let me write it down right now.
Okay.
But yeah, so they can come and talk about it, and for the teachers to be aware, and school staff to be aware in general.
Right, definitely, that's very important.
Okay, well, thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for listening again to Let's Talk About It. We will be back next week. And minus again, Scott is still going to be in Idaho. So have a good weekend. Have a safe weekend, too. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It. Heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KGBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.